You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Samuel Adams, Brewing the American Dream. Hear stories from their inspiring entrepreneurs on Let's Talk About Food, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Our guest today is no stranger to competition and no stranger to media notoriety. She's one of the rare few that has managed to strike twice, first as an Olympian and more recently as an acclaimed chef, working through some of the best restaurants in Houston, past the competition on Top Chef Season 18, and now into the innovation community of Houston's ION with her own concept.
We're excited to welcome to the show today Chef Dawn Burrell and excited to learn more about late August. So let's hop right in because Alex and I do some background research and there's very little on late August so far. So tell us all the things. Give us all the spoiler alerts.
First, I want to start by saying thank you guys for having me. I'm pretty much an avid listener, so I love
you. Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah. So thanks again. So late August, this has been... I mean, as you've heard it all, right? You know, the trials of opening a restaurant. It's been a long time coming. We're about a year behind our schedule. So, we're kind of holding things back to make sure that, when we release, we kind of get that wave of the release of, the information about the concept itself. Instead of people having to wait even longer. But I think we'll have it this time. So late August pays homage to the Sears catalog because we are housed in the former historic Sears building in Houston. It's a play on, the wishing and wanting of an anticipation of what's to come, as far as, the catalog, those feelings that the catalog would bring you.
That's funny because it's also such a great time for like summer produce. So it's like a highlight, I feel like, of the chef season. No?
For sure. Well, in this region, like you're hard pressed to get anything fresh because it's so hot down here. unlike in New York, where like the Union Square Market is super plentiful and robust. Like, the summer months are really the bad months here in Houston.
Tell us a little bit about the concept of, if you can, of late August and the food style and all that good stuff.
Yes, so the food style will be global comfort with. Very specific expressions of the African diaspora and also with some Asian techniques because that is my background.
Right, from Uchi, from your days at Uchi.
Yeah, from days of my Uchi, like more specific, the modern Japanese, a lot of Vietnamese influence there. I have a good amount of Mandarin Chinese training. All of those things are part of me and my culinary style.
So it's really your culinary journey from African diaspora to the places where you've worked over the past 10 years. I love that. Tell us a little bit about, we always like to dive into like the delays and what's happening. So tell us what you can. So you mentioned you're a year behind. Tell us what's been going on.
Right. We're housed in... a tech building, they have their general contractors there. So we were kind of waiting for, our build out terms and things like that. Let me back up and say, like, we were waiting to get through the city. And that took about 8 or 9 months. And once our plans were finally approved, then we had to have meetings with the general contractors attached to the IM building itself. And then we had to find a new project manager / architect and see what the discrepancies between the plans that were approved and the plans that were submitted and the plans that were actually held by us and try to figure out where, you know, where there were differences and map all of that out and see if we need to go back to the city for reapproval. So it's just been a lengthy and learned process.
Can only imagine. I know it's probably been so frustrating as well. What has anything changed for you all since the build out process has been longer than you thought? Like, has design changed? Any design?
Yes. So after we parted ways with the architect, we revisited the plans and made sure that, you know, all of the electrical was right. We decided to then hire a restaurant designer who improved our floor plan, which doesn't really require us to go back to the city for, because it's just, you know, it's just a plan. We're not moving anything specific or anything detailed. We're just moving the furniture around, and they were able to get us quite a few more seats, which is, you know, helpful, you know, and you know, improve the design, the overall feel of the restaurant itself. So these were good changes.
How big is the space and how many seats? And
we have now we have a total of 114 both in and out, and with a private dining room. And I think the square footage is maybe about 1,500 to 1,600.
Okay. And the ION building is parts of it open? Are the offices already filled and operating, or is the whole thing slowed down?
So the ION itself is up and running, and they're about at 40% capacity right now. You know, but that's much needed business that we were kind of counting on,
sure.
You know, because, you know, the term of the lease is that, you know, we're open for lunch, and the assumption is that our lunch audience will be built in.
Right.
Well, if you're only at 40% capacity, that's less likely to be so.
Are there other food concepts in there as well?
Yes, there's one more. There's a restaurant, a coffee shop that kind of doubles as a cafe, but they close at 3 o'clock, and a brewery that is immediately next door.
Right. So in some senses, you're probably not necessarily in a rush to open if the other office stuff isn't open as well and the customers aren't there yet.
Exactly. That's exactly that. There are some requirements that we have to meet based on our lease negotiations. So we are really pushing to try to be open for September 1st.
September 1st. It's soon. It's coming. It's coming faster than we all know it.
Coming
can
so soon.
Can you make
soon.
It late August?
I know. Like, you can't, I know. You got to make it late August.
The namesake sort of screams at an opening for August 27th or something, right?
Most certainly. Like, I think that we're hoping to do some soft openings in late August, but we will have to see. It all depends on, you know, when our equipment comes in. And, you know, all of these things take a lot of time. And, you know, some of the lead times are for, like, back bars, for example, like 22 weeks, you know, so like we just need to make sure that we're ordering well. Like, we're at the point where we're like, we'll just order some temporary equipment, you know, and then like, and when, you know, we'll open with this equipment and then later on we'll replace it, you know. So it's just we're really trying to get it open by any means.
What happened with the equipment? Is it like kitchen equipment, or is it more like small wares? Is it everything has just been supply chain challenged up the wazoo?
Yeah, it's mostly everything. Small wares are not as challenging as like ranges, for example. Like, you know, some ranges also have 6 month lead times. You know, so we have to make sure that we're being very selective with what we purchase, so that we can get them on time. We can't wait for these things to open. And like, if it's like, for example, tables for the front of the house, like we will figure out a way to open with temporary tables and trade them out. So it's just a matter of, you know, being smart and nimble, you know, and kind of making sure that we can do everything that's within our power to make sure that we meet that deadline.
The world we're living in. Tell us
yes.
a little bit. So you said it's 40% occupied. This the the building. What is are they having challenges because of, is it, it's office space, I assume, and is it because of like people working from home? Has that been impacting how they fill the building and you guys as well?
Possibly. I really don't know that much about the inner workings of their leasing program or challenges. I can say that there may have been a bit of delay with them getting the word out, but they give lots of tours and people are very interested. May I say that also it is an incredible building. So I don't think that they'll have a problem filling it. I just think that it has taken a bit longer than they anticipated. Mm-hmm. But we house major companies like Microsoft. They have an outpost there. And there are lots of different tech hubs and small businesses that work from there. We also have the sister company of a WeWork space. What is that called? I can't remember the name of it. It will come to me in the middle of our conversations. but it operates under WeWork, and it's amazing. It's amazing, and so lots of little small startups that are, you know, that are housed on the floor as well.
Amazing. So build it, and they will come. Kind of vibe.
Exactly.
And
yes.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be awesome. So it sounds like you guys are you're pretty close. You're just waiting for equipment to come in and design is done. Have you been able to get in there and like test recipes and do the menu, or is that sort of happening at home?
Well, I've written the menu. I wrote the menu about a year ago, and I utilize some of my events to test certain things. I want to test them on real audiences. So like if I have like a JBF tasting event or something, I'll do a small version. I'll make a small version of a dish that I plan on serving, you know.
How many times have you changed that menu in the last year?
I mean, it's an ongoing, it is an ongoing project. I'm telling you, like, I mean, you know, it's about editing, right? So, you know, I love to write a menu, leave it alone for a few weeks and go back, revisit it. I'm like, what was I thinking? You know, it's like, right. You know, so it's like that whole process is very pleasing to me. And I also, I test here in my home and we have a commissary kitchen. So I also like go by and play with a few ingredients here and there. So it's been a very fun process, but I'm not finished at all.
Mm-hmm. Not until the opening day.
Yeah. Well, in the next phase, I really want to include, you know, my number two, or number one. What do you say that? My right-hand person, my chef de cuisine. I want to include them in the process because ultimately, you know, it needs to be theirs when I'm gone. You know, and so in order to do that, you know, and for them to feel comfortable about it, they're, you know, whatever the menu is and executing it as if it's their own, you know, they're, I'd like them to be a part of all the recipe writing, all of that. So to know fully that they understand it and that we did it together.
Teamwork. Well, tell us a little bit about team and hiring, and are you there yet?
So my hiring process is, I don't know if it's different or not. It's just something that it's a way that I like to do things. I really enjoy like front chef friend referrals and also kind of getting to know someone casually, like kind of a courtship, so to speak, before even inviting them to, you know, to participate, you know, in the project. And that just means that, and these are for key positions, right? For GM, AGM, chef de cuisine, and sous chef, right? And so I want to get to know them. So I invite them to come cook with me after we kind of hang out for a little bit and come cook with me at an event. And I give them leadership on, you know, certain projects and see, you know, within that event. And, you know, and so that's just my way of trying to, you know, understand in real time and in real life a person's strengths and weaknesses. And they're also pressurized situations. So, you know, you get to kind of see what they're like under pressure. you know. So all of these things are very important to me because ultimately, like, your staff is your family, and you have to know whether you're going to be able to get along with this person and whether your work styles kind of mesh together.
I mean, you spend more time with your team members than you do with your family, unless you're like Alex and I are married to each other, then it's just like all of your time is together.
exactly. Working home, together.
Together. But if we didn't work together, I would probably spend more time with my work teammates than with him. But yeah, I mean, it is an interesting approach. So it's like basically like a prolonged stage and real life situations.
Exactly it. And, you know, I have a sous chef in mind that I've known for years, and I've watched her work, and I know where she works. And I love her attention to detail and, you know, and how she responds in adversity. And I've learned this over years with her, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now, mind you, I won't have that luxury with everyone, but mm-hmm. it's just nice to be able to do that and know that someone will fit well. And then from there, like, you kind of, as a collective, you hire you know, your team, you know, your line cooks, your prep cooks and things like that. And you know, there are more people that will help you vet. Which I think is great, you know, and, you know, I won't have the luxury of courting the line cooks, for example, for that lengthy period of time, but at least I'll have those that I have courted for a long time help me.
I like that. I like that you're saying courting. Because it is, it's like, you know, we're growing our business right now and we're hiring, and it's like, I feel like we're speed dating, right? Alex had like 17 speed dating interviews for production managers last week, right? It's so stressful.
Glad I don't have to speed date because this is tough. Yeah.
I mean, how successful have y'all been? Do you feel comfortable? Is it good?
It's good to, you know, it's always fun to meet new people. And, you know, it's really, it's tricky. I wouldn't say, you know, hiring is a challenge because you're looking at all these different factors, right? Of, you know, obviously someone's resume and their, you know, strengths on paper, but it's also a lot about chemistry and, you know, what kind of culture you're trying to create. And those are hard things to sort of figure out in a half an hour, right? So in some ways, 100%. You're fortunate to have this amount of time.
Yes. Indeed. And so I am thankful for that, you know, but I have not opened, we're about to open our hiring up to, you know, to the public. And that's when it will get a little bit crazy, kind of like, you know, like what you're doing right now. So essentially we like speed dating for a number of weeks.
Tell us a little bit about your bigger team, not your bigger team, but your other team within Lucille Hospitality Group and how that came to be and, you know, how you guys support each other and such as you wait for late August to get open.
Right. So we have, under the Lucille's Hospitality Group umbrella, we have a nonprofit, Lucille's 1913, whose mission is to combat food insecurity head on. And we have a chef team that mans that endeavor. Underneath the non-profit umbrella, we have a fermentation lab that I helped to build, and then we have a catering team as well. We have Lucille's the restaurant, and Chris is right now, he's opening a restaurant in Halifax called Emile's. So we're a busy group, but we do support each other. The chefs, I lean on the chefs for the nonprofit, hard because I don't have a staff right now. And so any endeavor that I have, you know, they also have, and they're aware of it. And, you know, so we just work together to make sure it happens. We communicate well with each other. And likewise, they also have my support if they need it. But underneath them, they have about 8 or 10 prep cooks. So, you know, they have a pretty healthy staff.
And how did you, how did, How did you and the Lucille's group decide to partner up? Because this is your first time working together, or you had already worked with them in Houston before?
Yes. So I met, this is my first time working with Chris Williams. And when I met him, he was building this, this hospitality group. Then he had Lucille's. And so that was his baby. He calls it the mothership. And we did an event together. A friend of mine named Dominic Lee, he had an idea of doing a dinner series for this very same reason, to combat food insecurity in the specific neighborhood, and to kind of inject some funds into a food desert. And so he gathered some of his chef friends. I was one of them, Chris Williams and Johnny Rhodes. We all got together and did this food apartheid dinner series. We called it FADS. And it was a month-long dinner series, and each of us hosted a dinner in our own style at our restaurants. And that was the first time I met Chris Williams. And he seemed great. You know, he worked fast, and he was also kind of distant, maybe a little bit standoffish. I don't know. But what I did not know was that he thought that I was crazy because of my cooking style and, you know, making everything from scratch and doing multiple breads. I think I made like three different types of bread or four different types of bread on the first dinner. And he was like, what is wrong with this girl? I don't know. I don't know. And then he was like, I'm staying far away from that. You know, and I'm like,
he's just playing hard to get, maybe. Maybe he's playing hard to get. He's like, yeah, we're going to work together. I don't know.
And then later, like, he was like, he told me about, you know, and then our friendship formed, and he was like, and then he told me about his project, and late August, he was like, isn't that a great name? I was like, I don't know. And then he explained it to me. I was like, that is dope. I was like, yeah, you're probably right. That is pretty good. And then, long story short, my mother had a stroke, and then I was invited to be on Top Chef, and I realized that I might not be able to go because I needed to take care of my mother. And he said, well, if that's your only challenge, I could help you with that, you know? And I was like, are you sure? You know, we went back and forth. I was like, I'm not asking you for help. I'm just venting. He's like, no. I was like, if that is your only challenge of going, if that's the difference between you going and competing on this show and not going, I can do that. And so he funded 100% my mom's care while I was gone.
I have goosebumps. That's an amazing partner and friend.
Yeah. He has the largest heart of anyone that I know, honestly. And that is the reason why that when he asked me to partner with him on this restaurant, I was like, you know, at first I was like, oh, you know, it's too soon. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know, like, you know, what the world is going to bring me after Top Chef. But then I was like, and then he convinced me by saying that we are really going to we're promoting change, like, and he wants to be the change in this world, and he wants to change the world by combating food hunger, you know, I mean, hunger, you know, in these insecure neighborhoods, and, you know, and injecting insecurity where there is none. And I was like, okay, I can do that. You know, I would love to do that, you know, because I'm aware, you know, that there's poverty in this world. And, you know, how can I serve all of these people that can afford these very nicely plated meals, but knowing that there are people who don't have food, you know, just down the street, you know? It's like, so if we can manage to do both things, like, that is like the perfect recipe of a job for me.
So tell us how, I mean, that's obviously, there's no better way to have a business that's also mission driven, and to find a business partner who's aligned on being mission driven as well as being, you know, business minded, and making sure both go hand in hand. So tell us a little bit about how late August will also be able to support the work that's being done with like 1913 and Lucille's.
Good question. And so we're moving every concept that we build. We'll have a philanthropic effort built into it. So every every entity will donate 10% of their profits to 1913. And so that, so each outpost will have their, that mission like attached to them. And we will do different things within our own systems, but just to know that like money that is earned through each concept will go back is very helpful, and it will help continue to fund the efforts for 1913.
And how do you explain that to like the customer, and do you guys end up having to charge a little bit more and then explain it back to the customer, and is everybody typically like supportive?
We're moving toward that. So I imagine we will have to come up with a system, so that everyone fully understands what we're about. You know, and the fact that we are fully integrated will also be, a point of education for our clientele base. But I think that people are very supportive of Lucille's and Lucille's 1913 because of the great job that we're doing with communities. And I don't think that we'll receive any pushback. They've been nothing but supportive and showing up at Lucille's thus far.
Yay. I would hope so. Yeah. When you tell a diner, hey, you're going to pay 10% more because you can afford it and we're combating food insecurity, kind of have to be an a-hole to say no to that, you know? So I think it is about like educating and redistributing. I mean, it's a great way to do it. And by the way, 10% is extremely generous. Like most companies who do like they'll do like 1% top line revenue. So 10% is just amazing.
Yeah. That is our goal. And I think that we will work at that diligently. And I know it's at first it will be uncomfortable, but any system that you implement can be uncomfortable in the beginning. But you just have to find a way to make it work.
I'm Louisa Kasdan, host of Let's Talk About Food. I recently hosted an exciting live podcast event in Boston and interviewed incredible women entrepreneurs who have received small business coaching from the Samuel Adams Brewing the American Dream program.
When I was applying to law school and I got in, I said, you know what? I'm still young. Let me pivot and go into the food industry and really follow my passion.
I was kind of scared. It was a new thing to me. It was like, hey, I don't want me in the newspaper. I just want to be in my room in my house. So that was when I'm like, okay, now that I'm in the local newspaper, I better not disappoint the people that, you know, that have this belief in me.
And on the days that you're tired or you feel defeated, just keep going. And 10 people might tell you no, but that doesn't mean that's your end result. You just have to keep going.
Hear their stories on Let's Talk About Food, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks again to Samuel Adams Brewing the American Dream for supporting this episode.
Should we lightning round?
Sure. Sounds good.
All right. We've been doing order fire, which is 10 minutes, 10 questions in 10 minutes.
Okay.
And if we were live,
we normally
cooking,
have you cooking.
Oh, okay.
On video. So like if we have people when they're in New York, either visiting or locals, then we'll put you on camera and make you cook a dish in 10 minutes and then ask you 10 questions. So you're really, really pushed. I know you're no stranger to cooking competition, so it wouldn't have been an issue for you, but
that's it. I could do this in my sleep.
Yeah. We'll do it this time without any cameras. But
alrighty.
And I'm glad that you have a menu developed because some of the questions sort of do go around that menu. So I'll be curious if they can hit. So first one is your favorite menu item on your hypothetical menu.
Oh, my favorite menu item would be I have a bite of seared scallop with a ham hock dashi and a Creole XO.
That sounds really good.
Sounds good. Curious, before we move on with the rest of the questions, did you do any history of the Sears building? Is there any of that that's actually in the food menu? What if there's anything to pull out?
Their expressions, we're going to design the menu so it's kind of going to look a little bit like a catalog.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then what they're going to be expressions of like Sears, like all over, but not in a kitschy way, but in a really cool kind of modern way. So I'm really excited for people to see that.
Cool. Jen, you want to do the next one?
Yes, the next one is most ordered menu item, but you're not open yet. So you can tell us most ordered item at one of your pop-ups recently.
People love the, I have a cured salmon with a tamarind tiger cry and a crispy salmon skin. It's a crudo, and I served it just last week, and I think somebody came and got 10.
Oh my God. Wow. How many are you doing pop-ups like weekly right now, or are you doing sort of monthly or just whenever they come up?
I'm doing events. So not necessarily like, hey, come try my food. It's more like last month I had a Juneteenth, my second annual Juneteenth celebration. Mm-hmm. And I invited a guest chef to, actually one local and one remote to come and cook with me. And then toward the end of the month was the JBF Taste of the America. And then this month I'll have an event or two. Next month will also be like the family reunion, Kwame Mwachi's family reunion.
So you're staying busy.
Cool. On your last, this is not on the list either, but on your last dish that you mentioned, and I had seen it in one of the articles that on the background, was that you're doing a lot of things with skin. How do you go about that? Are your butcher or your fishmongers able to deliver skin only, or is it just like you're utilizing whole animal byproduct?
It's a combination of both. I can ask my fishmonger for skin because, you know, they're always making salmon fillet skin off. And so, or cutting them for their customers. And so I'll just ask to buy some, or sometimes they give it to me, which is great. And the chicken skin that I use, it's just a byproduct of us cutting chickens for the nonprofit and for Lucille's restaurant.
That'll probably be a lead into our third actual question, which is your best food cost item.
I imagine it's going to be my bar snack. I think I'm gonna name it Crispy Things, and it's gonna have salmon skin, chicken skin, and probably like a house made rice cracker or a tapioca cracker or something like that with a couple dips. That's going to be my low-cost item.
That is very aptly named. I like that. I like it when things are just called what they are. Just crispy things. Crispy things and dips. I love it. I would order it. Tell me, will you be able to scale using some of the byproduct from the other restaurants, or do you think you'll just have to order it for your own or have your own byproduct as you open and you're scaling the restaurant?
We definitely will. Our commissary kitchen where... Chef Lawrence runs his nonprofit program, meal program. We also cook for Lucille's there, and they break down chickens and all of that there. And so they will steadily stockpile the byproduct for me. And we will also, once we are running the fermentation lab full throttle, We will gather like scrap and overages from each restaurant. Like, for example, tail ends of green tomatoes from Lucille's, for example, and make a chow chow out of those, you know. And so, like, our intention is to be as close to zero waste as possible as an entity. And we'll be working through that, toward that in everything that we do, which is why we have a fermentation lab in the first place.
Yeah, very cool. Very, very cool. Tell us something. Well, this sort of leads into the next question, something that you're doing to make your business sustainable. And that can be like sustainable work-life balance-wise or sustainable, like we just talked about, where you're trying to make it zero waste.
Of course, I will always promote work-life balance. You know, I had a dream that a dream of mine is to have some sort of exercise and or fitness system with my restaurant family, you know, and it just means that we'll maybe do a 7-minute HIIT workout, you know, for work, and that can contribute to a little bit to their work life balance and when they're caring for themselves. You know, I hope that I can incorporate that into my program. I know that a lot of chefs are successful. And I hope that, my hope is that, you know, I can promote, health and wellness, through that activity with my staff. And then secondly, it's just, it will be, you know, just what I talked about, you know, continuing to expand the fermentation lab as we start farming more and more, and just making sure that we are diligent with fermenting and pickling and our overages and things like that, and also composting.
Do you want to talk about Pineapple Run Club now or after the call? I'm just kidding.
Both, for sure. Yeah, I like that you said that, Dawn, because I do want to hit you up after it, because we are working on a Pineapple Run Club, which is essentially the goal is to make some sort of a national community around hospitality running clubs. So we can delve into that later on the side and essentially figure out how to make it easy for you as a restaurateur to implement that for your team members or your community or whoever. But anybody else that's listening that wants to hit me up, then please do, because I'd love to learn more about how we can be of help. But I'll hit you up with that later and we'll talk about it after the show.
Awesome.
Part of that, and these are all leading in quite nicely, I feel like, is your next question is, how do you plan to hire and retain great employees?
Well, I mean, you only know so much through your initial vetting system. So the person that I end up hiring, I just hope that they know that the culture of the restaurant is that we are a family, and we need to make sure that we care about each other. And I also have to show them that I care about them by asking them about themselves, making sure they're good. Being open to conversation with them, you know, after service, and all of these things just, kind of impart a healthy culture in a restaurant. And I am not perfect. So I have had some minor, setbacks or failures in previous, concepts. Not because I didn't care, but because, you know, either I was overwhelmed or I didn't understand, like, how much a person needs. It's almost like you have to be a therapist and a chef at the same time, you know. But my goal is to get better and better at that every day and let my staff know that I really care about them. The mission is, you know, excellence, but I also need to be excellent at making sure that they're cared about as well as caring for myself.
As a pretty perfect answer. I'll let Jen, you take the next one.
We like to ask this to everybody. What's your most, who's been your most influential role model within or outside of the hospitality industry?
Influential role model. I have a couple, and I have a couple of favorites. I love Paola. We hang out, and I think she's so
she's
great.
She's easy to love.
Yeah. She's very lovable.
She's very encouraging, and she's supportive, and she shares, and I think that it's great. I'm a fan and a friend of Kwame Nwachi, because I can always pick up the phone and call him if I have a question about something I know nothing about, you know, or if I need a resource, he's there for me. Marcus Samuelson.
These are all great people to have on your Rolodex or on your group chat, should I say.
All right, awesome. Next one, Dawn. What was the worst to date building or developing moment in your opening process?
They're all pretty bad.
She's like, it's been a year
this one,
of building.
Dawn, this one. We're really having a few months.
just realizing that the architect made a lot of mistakes, and especially that we missed. Like, and he had the opening budget for a restaurant. I mean, for the kitchen, the cost of building out the kitchen at, like, I don't know, something ridiculous, like $40,000 or something like that. and Chris, when he caught it, he was like, oh my gosh, I cannot even believe that I even missed this. So I was like, how did we miss this? So I think that it just happened because we were not on top of him as much as we should have been. And it just kind of got by us. Once Chris realized that, he made the correction immediately. And then we had to part ways with that person.
Yeah, that's no fun at all.
No.
Especially when you're like, set a budget based on something and you're like, JK, that's like a gut punch. Oy.
Exactly. Like, and so we, you know, once he was looking at the finances more closely, he realized that that wasn't even close. And, you know, and so we just had to make adjustments.
Gotta do what you gotta do. Yep. What about what's been the best business resource or piece of advice you've received during this process?
You mean as a culinary professional or as a restaurateur?
Either or both.
Yeah, it can be a book. It can be it can be a person. It can be a TV show. It can be whatever. Online, website, whatever.
Well, I think that what stands out to me most is that I need to always be my authentic self as far as my food is concerned. And because authenticity is key, it doesn't mean that one stick to one specific style. It just means that don't be afraid to reflect yourself in your food, even if it has something to do with like your grandparents or your aunts or, you know, like, or something that's kind of authentically yours or innately yours from your family. Don't be afraid to not only share it, but also be very proud of it when you're doing that. So,
one thing you'd tell a young chef about the path to ownership, restaurant ownership?
I'm still learning. It would be that to never stop learning. It's like, you know, so what I can't tell you, like I can show you through this process, you know. And so I'm authentic and truly open as far as that's concerned, sharing the bumps in the road, sharing the small victories and all of that. I'm willing to teach that along the way, and as I grow and learn what my story is, I will be able to tell it more succinctly from start to finish.
Never stop learning. I still feel like I'm learning every day.
Mm-hmm. Man. I mean, but definitely learn from your failures is what I have to say.
Oh yeah. And final one, what is your why? Why did you choose to be a chef and open a restaurant?
I had to dig deep. Jenny, to figure out what I wanted to do after athletics. Everything in me pointed to food. And I had such fond food memories. And I remember, you know, how I coveted, like, food experiences and flavors as a child and growing up. Now, that is not, you know, a chef decision to make. Like, it's not that. But I knew that I wanted to do something within food, with food, and so I explored it, you know, because I had to kind of redefine like who I was, and that was really part of me, and actually throughout that journey, I realized that I really do come from a food family. Like not necessarily culinary professionals, but educators in some way, pastry and baking chefs, you know, are in my family, and so it just took me kind of taking my position in this career to realize that we have that commonality amongst ourselves.
So it's always there. You just needed to find it.
Exactly.
All right. Should we do any opening soon announcements?
Sounds good. Do we have any?
Yeah, Dawn, any friends who've recently opened or anybody you want to shout out and could be in Houston or beyond?
Oh, I don't know of any that are coming. Evelyn Garcia is also opening soon in the city.
In the city of Houston?
In the city of Houston. Yeah.
Cool.
Chef Evie, I love that. Great.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, she's my homie, so we get along really well. We actually saw each other at the event last week. We had a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, our friends from the Nortwick opened their doors a couple weeks ago, and Alex and I were on the show earlier this season. We talked about, you know, opening with them, and they finally opened, and Alex and I got to go and eat. And then also very exciting, Hags, which episode aired about 6 months ago.
I listened to that.
Yes. Telly and Camille are they started reservations through Resy, and they're officially, I think their first day of service is like the 17th or in a couple weeks. And Alex and I snagged a reservation for August 11th, and I'm very excited. So if you're in New York City, check that out.
That's awesome. I know.
And you're coming to New York soon, so you'll check it out.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'll be there August 22nd, so I only hope to snag a reservation. I don't even know what day that is. But I would definitely come.
There will be plenty of good places to eat. Tell us, Dawn, how we find you, your restaurant, and restaurant group, and everything on social and online.
For sure. You can find me on Instagram at Chef Dawn Burrell. The restaurant will be at Late August HTX. Lucille's Hospitality Group is the handle on Instagram for the hospitality group overall. And the nonprofit's handle is at Lucille's 1913.
Cool. Very exciting. And you can find us at Till at NYC and at We Are Opening Soon. Thank you so much, Dawn, for telling us about your restaurant.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's been fun.
So fun.
And I'm excited. I can't wait to share late August with you guys after we're open.
Same. We'll come to Houston. Excited for you.
Opening Soon is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.